Josh Nelson is with me. You can check out his blog at filmology.com. That's with a PH. We are going to talk inspiring films. I'm keen to find out what Josh makes of the new Salinger flick documentary. I don't think the pedigree of the filmmaker recommends the topic. He did work on it for a while. But before we do that, we're going to do something inspiring, or at least discuss something inspiring. It's called The Rocket. Josh, tell me about The Rocket.
Look, The Rocket is an Australian-made film set in Laos, set and made in Laos, and it has an interesting backstory. It's written and directed by a guy called Kim Mordant, who directed a doco called Bomb Harvest, which came out 2007. I think it was a co-production with ABC, which looked at the bomb disposal units, or an Australian who'd gone over to Laos, and he was working, training people with the bomb disposal units. And why that was such a kind of an almighty task is that I think Laos is the most bombed country on the face of the earth, which is a pretty scary statistic. In fact, you know, there's all this stuff.
They're defusing mines or bombs? I know the Americans dropped more mines, I'm pretty sure, in Laos than they did in Vietnam. Is it mines or bombs?
It's a combination of both. Right. So you have the mines that were left, particularly along the Ho Chi Minh Trail in that area of Laos, but also the bombies. These are small, because it was scattered bomb devices that the United States were using. Which
bomblets.
Well, yeah, they call them bombies, but they look like rambutan. They look like little fruits. So kids come and play with them and start throwing them at each other, and inevitably, you know, ends in pretty severe tragedy. So that was the setup of the documentary. And I think that experience, and he's worked and lived in Laos for quite some time, informs this. This is a fictional narrative. It's an underdog sort of coming of age story about a young boy called Arlo, who's a twin, but his twin dies at birth. And there's a superstition, at least in the village which the film opens into, that if you're a twin, you have to be put down, because basically whenever twins are born, there's one evil and one good, but you can never know. Wow. So this is the superstition. So of course, because the other child's dead, they assume that this child, Arlo, is bad luck. And this sort of stigma is attached to him growing up. What's interesting is that the film then sort of the film is really about displacement as well, and what we get is the way in which this village, which is sort of undisturbed, is forced to move because of a hydroelectric dam that's basically sort of coming in. And in this sort of the first of many displacements we see in the film, you know, there's another sort of tragedy. But it follows basically Arlo, his parents, and a grandmother in their attempt to kind of find some sort of home in this still pretty battle-scarred, ravaged landscape where there's the scars of the American war in Vietnam over. Anyway, where The Rocket comes in, they end up in a village that's about to have a rocket festival. And the kid decides if he can get together this rocket, if he can win the prize money, then he can save his family. So that's the, I guess, where the uplifting story starts to emerge. But, you know, it takes a while, and there's some other sort of ancillary characters that come in. I love this film. I think it's beautifully shot. It's got a lot of heart. It's another one of those films where the director has plucked an actor, or these sort of non-professional actors from obscurity. The lead actor who plays Arlo, Sitifon Disimo, I may have pronounced that incorrectly, so apologies, was a street kid. And he said the child was so resourceful that he had to cast him. Like he just sort of owned the character right away, you know, right from the beginning. I think the fascinating thing about this film, where it takes it beyond the sort of the saccharine sort of tale we often get with underdog stories, is the political backdrop. And it's so much of this film talks about politics and history and the kind of culture of trauma in and through the personal tale. And that, I think that's a really hard trick to pull off. And I think we also get the sense that this is a director, despite this being a foreign director coming into a country, we don't get that sense of the cultural exoticism that you could get. We get the nuances of the different tribes and the interrelationship between the kind of tribal conflicts. But also the very idea of having a rocket festival that's the centerpiece of a film about a country that's been bombed to smithereens, and what that sort of represents. And I, you know, when they first introduced this idea of the rocket festival, it's quite disarming. It's almost like a black comedy in many ways. Like, how could a country, you know, it's use bombed. This as a sort of a celebration? Mm-hmm. But it's an act of defiance, and I think it's an act of defiance for the people within the film, but also this kid. It's his chance to not only sort of make good on and break the superstition of his past, but also prove that there's something worthwhile, something worth kind of fighting for. Yeah, look, this is a really beautiful film.
So is it, you obviously like it, is it a glossy film? What's its look?
It's not glossy in terms of high production values. I think the reference to it being a beautiful film is the countryside. I mean, we get a real sense of this country that's sort of growing back or recovering from, you know, 40 years on from the American war in Vietnam. But also the scars that are still there. Like it's a poignancy. There's a moment where Arlo's swimming, and he actually takes he's swimming in one of the first of the hydroelectric dams that's already rubbed out another tribe. And as he dives under the water, we get these images of submerged statues and all these sort of tribal artifacts from the last culture that's sort of been pushed out. Yeah. And it's this incredible moment that's really beautiful, but it's also marred with this sort of tragic underside. And we get that at various other points throughout the film.
We've actually got a little bit of the director, Kim Mordaunt, talking on SBS about the beginnings of making the film in Laos.
You know, once you've been inside a country that experienced war, it pretty much never leaves you. I don't think it will ever leave us. And so really we collaborated again with some of the Lao community, and in particular Pauline Puminda, who's the associate producer and who we worked with on Bomb Harvest, and we said, well, let's make another film. Really the response from the Lao community and the people who saw the film around the world was, next time can we make it from a Lao perspective? And also Laos doesn't have an established film industry, so come on, you guys, you're the team, let's go and do it. And so seeded the rocket.
That's Kim Mordaunt talking on SBS about The Rocket. There's a great text here. The Rocket is absolutely delightful, Raf. I lived in Laos for a while, and it's a beautiful and accurate reflection of the country I know and love. Nice. Where's it on, Josh?
It's only got a small release. It's currently showing at the Nova, the Como, Belgrave. I think that's the Cameo, and Brighton Bay. I think that point that he raised there is really interesting, this idea of giving back a sense of identity, because like many other things in Laos, the film industry was bombed to smithereens. It doesn't really have a vibrant film industry. So trying to kind of give a sense of culture or instill this sense of culture by going over there and making a film, as he says, in collaboration, I think is a really important step.
And important to reflect a culture back at people in a modern way as well. You need that too, don't you? Look, 1300 222 774. I'd like to know the films that inspired you. I've got lots of texts. Wow, I'm interested in the films that you find inspiring. A Dangerous Mind, the Freud Jung film, was awesome. Look, it was powerful. I wouldn't put it in the inspiring category, but this is Deb's text.
What is it inspired?
Reminded me of a layer of sexual tension that I'm incorporating into a character's journey that I'm writing as a result. That's Deb's text.
Creative inspiration. That's fair.
I can get that. Slumdog Millionaire and The Kite Runner. I can dig that. Invictus, the film about Nelson Mandela, shows how to forgive by someone thinking two steps ahead of the people around him. And another text, The Crash Reel. Definitely, I would call that an inspiring film. That goes up there. Get that on DVD. It's extraordinary. We've spoken about that. And Searching for Sugar Man from Greg, To Kill a Mockingbird from another Greg in Paran. 1300 222 774. Your inspiring films. The one we were talking about is The Rocket. It's on selectively, places like the Nova and the Belgrave Cameo, some of the Palace cinemas as well. I'll get to some of your calls on inspiring films, but I want to chat about the Salinger documentary, heavily trailed, pushed by the Weinsteins, isn't it? I think it's a Weinstein film. Let's have a little listen to the trailer about the writer.
The publication of Catcher in the Rye in 1951 was a revolution.
There had not been a voice like that.
When you're a kid and you read Catcher in the Rye, you're just like, oh my God, somebody gets it.
I remember that being the first book you take with you.
It is a phenomenon. How many millions and millions came to that book?
The great mystery is why he stopped.
Salinger was a national story, a shooting star.
At the height of that success, he disappears. He became the Howard Hughes of his day.
Thumping music, dramatically overdone commentary from Martin Sheen and Ed Norton. Is it almost worth seeing to see how bad it can be, as one reviewer wrote?
I saw this knowing very little about its critical unacclaim in America before I came to it. And in fact, they did something quite strange in Australia, which they don't often do. They released it a day after all the other films. It was released on a Friday and not a Thursday. And I think that may have been to avoid any kind of critical scrutiny in the opening weekend. Wow, I think this should be called TMZ Presents Salinger.
Right.
This is, you're right, what you said before about this is a film J.D. Salinger probably would have despised.
Ran screaming from it a million miles an hour.
And I should have suspected as much from the opening scene, where it opens with a tabloid journalist recalling his attempts to hunt Salinger down and take a photo of him. And the interesting thing about opening with that scene is not that it frames up, you know, the scrutiny of his life. It frames up a sympathy for a tabloid press, yeah, and that right. How dare Salinger have this kind of hideaway. And then we get these
Instead of focusing on or trying to untangle the significance of his silence, they're outraged by his silence.
Yeah, and we have these side stories involving, you know, crazed fans who turn up at Salinger's door, front door, and recount their story. And in those scenarios, in those interviews, we get a sense that Salinger was a rude bastard because he dismissed me and said, "I'm just an author, leave me alone."
Right.
So it's a tabloid sensationalist documentary. And I think the point of that being so frustrating is that Catcher in the Rye clearly has a wealth of cultural significance in terms of the timing. I mean, 1951, the youth voice, this idea of the shift in popular culture, which is mirrored in things like Rebel Without a Cause, the James Dean film, or even just the style of prose. Nothing about Catcher in the Rye actually gets explored or understood in any right. broader context, or even in right. the terms of the content of the novel itself. What you get is this spattering of celebrity interviews, all of which are gushing over it and saying things like you just heard there, it revolutionized literature. It's the greatest American novel of our time. And we get this repetition. The film goes for over 2 hours. And spattered with these reenactments, which look like kind of a stage production of this.
I've heard about bad reenactments. Yes.
Traumatized Salinger sitting at his typewriter while these back projections play behind him. The other frustrating thing that I found about this was there were such interesting aspects that could have led to a really interesting documentary. So I never knew that Salinger went to war. He was in World War II.
Yeah, that's the critical experience, isn't it? Liberating the Dachau, and that's what turns the Park Avenue boy into the tortured soul.
Yeah, you know, he was on the beaches of Normandy. Like, these are formative events.
Didn't he carry Catcher in the Rye onto the beach? Yeah.
Yeah, he had something like 3 or 4 chapters with him. So these incredible, interesting sort of revelations, or at least they were for me, that could have, again, been sort of tied to some sort of biographical account, some sort of understanding of the text and what that meant for him on a personal level and
a
cultural.
Pissed up against a wall.
Yeah, and we don't get that. It does feel like tabloid. And the other thing that I found particularly offensive about this film in its later stages, where it really just amps up the tabloid, is it brings up the shooting of Lennon. And it goes into this backstory of, what was his name, Mark?
Because the crazy guy who did that said he was inspired by Catcher in the Rye.
Yeah. So we get this whole sort of backstory about Lennon, the build-up to Lennon being shot, the kind of excuse, interviews with the cops who were there at the time, and Mark Chapman. And then rather than interrogate this as a sort of a flight of fancy of tabloid journalism, we get authors saying, yeah, look, if I'd been responsible for a work that inspired that, I'd be pretty upset and feel guilty too. So it just completely sort of taps into this mentality. Oh, this is an incredibly frustrating documentary. I've only actually just started reading.
Thumbs down.
Yeah. Are you a fan of Catcher in the Rye?
I haven't read it. Another one I haven't read. Another one of the canon.
I've just started reading it at the moment. I feel like I should have been reading it 20 years ago to tap into that kind of, teen angst, but too late.
Look, many of you mentioning films. Oh, Life as a House with Kevin Klein is an inspiring film. We're talking about inspiring films. We're talking about The Rocket and the Salinger documentary that is just called Salinger.
Just called Salinger.
Silent Running should be seen by every climate change skeptic. That's from Simon in Rovell. The Mission. Oh, The Mission. Yes, that's a great film. Flying High. Someone's nominating Flying High. Somebody else is nominating Bad Boy Bubby. Please don't tell me that's an inspiring film. And Donnie Darko, I like that as an inspiring film. It's okay to be weird and unpopular. Salinger's on wide release, Josh?
Smallish now. Smallish, we should have actually mentioned, because he's responsible for your favourite film over the last 2 years. Shane Salerno, the director of this abomination, wrote Savages.
Did he really?
And Alien versus Predator Requiem.
Oh, Savages is
and
terrible.
Shaft. So maybe he should stick to those kind of preoccupations.
Oh, Savages was just woeful. And someone's saying Catcher in the Rye, worst book ever. That's from Joe. Joe, I think there are about 60 to 80 million people around the world who've bought a copy who disagree with you. But I can't talk because I haven't seen it. And another, yes, I would agree with these selections as well. Life is Beautiful, To Kill a Mockingbird, we mentioned, and Terrence Malick's The Thin Red Line and Tree of Life. Bang on. I'll snap you those. Josh, thank you for coming in.
Pleasure.
Josh Nelson's a film critic. You can read his blog at filmology.com. That's spelled with a P-H.